Hey everyone, before we get into the episode, I just wanted to mention my Validating Your Anger Masterclass. This masterclass is basically everything I've ever learned about anger. I've had a difficult and complicated relationship with anger, as it was modeled to me badly as a child. I've had an unhealthy fear of my rage and have found that rage is an outward expression of anger becoming out of control. But don't worry, I've also experienced it inwardly too in the form of depression and found it so difficult I used alcohol as a coping mechanism to avoid these feelings. These are both signs of anger suppression. This masterclass is everything I've ever learned from my personal experiences, client experiences, spending time with knowledgeable thought leaders, and of course, my formal education. It's all in there, and you'll learn what anger is and how to correctly frame it, how to get underneath the anger so you can eventually move past the rage stage, how to validate it by exploring its justifications, how to express it safely so that it doesn't impact your relationships. And there'll be some growth worksheets to help you really understand individual anger issues. The masterclass is on Sunday, March 12th at 6 p.m. and you can book your place via my website, www.theselfdevelopmentcoach.co.uk, or you can tap the link in the show notes. I look forward to meeting and working with you at the masterclass. Hi, I'm the self-development coach, Johnny Lawrence, and welcome to the Self-Development Podcast.
People might be sitting there really thinking, like, I'm really pissed off about this situation with my girlfriend or work or whatever it may be, and not realize that it's largely just because the body is out of balance. Those thoughts aren't actually that truthful. And I have to constantly guide myself with this. Like if I have a weekend, for example, where I party harder, like have some late nights and I drink a bit more alcohol than I usually would, I know that's going to mean the dopamine as well is really low. When our dopamine is low, we feel like a laziness and a lack of excitement for our life. And when I'm having these thoughts, I have to check in with myself. Even still now to this day, I go, yeah, but remember the dopamine is low. So these thoughts aren't probably that real and truthful. And I think having that awareness makes such a difference to how you feel in your head.
Today is set to be a fun episode. No pressure, TJ. But on this episode, I'm excited to be speaking with TJ Power. TJ is a neuroscientist, international neuroscience speaker, and online mental health content creator who delivers mental health training to over 10,000 people and is the co-founder of Neurify. He delivers highly engaging, gamified mental health training experiences and has built a new formula for mental health called DOSE. That's D-O-S-E, which stands for dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins, the four main mental health brain chemicals, and teaches employees and students to truly understand their mental health. TJ's Instagram has almost 80,000 followers, and he provides neuroscience-based mental health guidance every single day. TJ, how are you, mate?
I'm good, Johnny. Thank you for having me here. I'm excited for this conversation.
Yeah, so am I. So am I. I just, like I said to you just before we hit record, I just love your passion. And how you explain things and how you also just take like real life scenarios, like a hangover, like something that everybody encounters at some point. And you try and sort of rationalize it in a way. And when I say that, I mean, in solutions, you know, like don't just sit there and give in to it. Like here's some stuff that you could do to feel better. And I think that's really one of the things that really made me want to reach out to you is that that's what you're all about, like how to make yourself feel better, because there's so much science out there. There's so much stuff that's really complicated and difficult to understand. And you have a way of just bringing it down to sort of plain talk and say, right, this is what you should do. And it works. Truth, it actually works.
That's cool to hear, man. Yeah, that is definitely what I'm aiming to do. Like I have a very realistic perspective on mental health. I know everyone loves all these things like booze and scrolling social media and all these different things. And I definitely believe there's a way to navigate the modern world and have all these fun things in our life, but also feel good in our heads. And I think the science-y neuroscience stuff can provide a good framework to do that.
Yeah, that's a really, see, just like that. It's a lovely way of explaining it. You're right. You know, people shouldn't, the answer's not always super restrictive stuff, is it? Sometimes it's about trying to find that. I prefer the word harmony to balance. Mm-hmm. I like the word harmony because it suggests that it's more changeable.
Definitely goes up and down.
Yeah, that's right. And that's it. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, we can get up with the best intentions in the morning, but sometimes we don't feel like doing the things we want to do. Sometimes we don't necessarily feel that motivation. Sometimes we need to be a bit harder on ourselves and use discipline. But all of that's okay. It doesn't have to be like so. Like, quite often I've found with clients is that their approach to making themselves feel motivated is really quite horrible. Like, just be horrible to myself, like make myself do stuff and be mean to myself. So yeah, I'm not overly keen on that approach. But I mean, for those that might not have come across you yet, I mean, could you tell people a little bit about yourself and your journey so far?
Yes. So I'm 25 and I work in this neuroscience space. I run this company called Neurify. I always was pretty interested in psychology. I played a lot of golf as a kid. Golf was my original dream, was becoming a professional golfer. And that kind of, from a really young age, like 8 to 10 years old, I was having sports psychology training and stuff like that. So super young, I was learning about how our brains worked. And then I actually discovered the world of having fun and girls and alcohol and decided golf wasn't necessarily the thing I wanted to pursue when I was 14, 15, which is funny. And I went deeper into this psychology topic. I had some pretty challenging life experiences between like 16 and 20. I lost a lot of family members that were close to me and stuff like that. And it made me kind of mature in my thinking a bit. Dove into psychology at university, got offered the chance to lecture when I was at university. And then, yeah, when COVID began and I kind of thought maybe I could train companies and schools, and it all kicked off from there.
Wow. Wow. That's quite the deep dive, that. I mean, there's so much there, isn't it? I mean, so you went from golf.
Yeah. Started with the golf.
To neuroscience.
That is quite a jump.
It's quite a jump. Is there any bits of information in between then?
I had this like psychology training in golf, because golf, if you've ever played it, is like an absolute nightmare in your brain. Basically, it's a very like mental game instead of like physical, like lots of the other sports, and had the training. And then during my like school years, I never really connected with school education that much. I found it quite boring and it just didn't really like hit the money for me. I managed to get through all the school education. I enjoyed the social aspect of school. And then when I was going to college, I like that bit. And when I was like 16, I was going to pick my A-levels. And for the first time I could study psychology, I picked that because I thought, oh, maybe learning about people will be interesting. And then that was the first time in my life I thought, wow, this is really, really cool. Started psychology, and then in that journey of studying, discovered things like dopamine and thought, wow, this is so cool. This is such a clear reason as to why lots of us feel shit in our heads at times and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it kind of went golf, psychology, then neuroscience.
So how do you think, if you don't mind me asking, and you obviously don't have to go into details, but how do you feel that the unpleasant experiences you experienced during that time became that catalyst for pursuing psychology? What do you think changed for you in that time span?
Yeah, that's a good question. So just for a bit of context, it was basically just some family members, some people were quite young, and there was like cancer and stuff like that. So young people passed away, and it's a while ago now, and I've done all the processing on these kind of things. But I'm the youngest of this big family. We've got like 17 cousins, loads of aunties and uncles and stuff. Got like a big family, and I'm the youngest of the whole system. And during the experience of these losses, I found I naturally gravitated towards being quite good at the conversations, at how we were all processing it and stuff like that. And when I discovered that I could do those conversations and I was of value to the family, I thought, oh, maybe this psychology guidance stuff is something that I'm just naturally in tune with. And yeah, that made me want to study it harder. And I found I was kind of helping some of my friends out and stuff like that with how they were feeling. And then it was just one of those things where I thought, oh, maybe this is just something I'm good at effectively. And that's what made me want to dive into it deeper.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, because it takes a certain type of person to be able to sit in those very uncomfortable spaces where you're talking about difficult emotions that involve conflict, that involve contradiction, and paradoxes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, sometimes we can experience two very powerful emotions that are opposing at the same time. And as humans, we want to make sense of that. But sometimes there isn't any sense to be made. Sometimes it's just a feeling.
I think that,
you know, for you to be, I mean, what was your age then?
So I was like 16.
Wow.
Yes, 16. And then between that sort of 16 and 20 years old, that was like a intense period for like our family. And yeah, definitely. It just like matured my brain quite a lot.
And I imagine it did.
Put me on like a bit of a different path, like where all my friends are at with like their things. And whenever you go through like grief and loss in your life, like it does move you emotionally forward in a way. And then, yeah, it was a powerful time. And I'm like grateful for the experience, to be honest. It's really connected us all together and stuff.
Yeah, that's some very intense post-traumatic growth, isn't it? And I mean, it sounds to me like that your emotional maturity just like grew like rapidly in that moment, which I think probably is what adds to your passion of your knowledge around neuroscience. Sounds like, I mean, I might be wrong, but
no, it does. It like, I rediscovered what it was like to feel really shit. And then I thought, I really want to feel really good. And in that process of also going through this experience, I really dived into the party lifestyle. I'm someone that is party oriented, very extroverted, love social environments. And I also discovered how fun the party lifestyle can be, but then also the challenges the party lifestyle can bring as well.
The consequences.
I discovered both sides, and it was pretty fun discovering both of the sides. Yeah. But and that also gave me a good insight into the brain, into like what makes me feel good and what makes me not feel good and all that sort of stuff. And simultaneously studying neuroscience, it was just pretty interesting, to be honest.
Yeah. And I think sometimes when people are not in a good place emotionally, the one thing that kind of has to be there in order for you to move forward is you have to want to.
Yeah. For sure.
And sometimes that's really hard, you know, because we have this natural tendency to gravitate away from the things that we kind of know will make us feel better and gravitate towards the things that give us that short return, but often have a longer consequence, you know, like getting drunk, because that feels like a great idea at the time. And then you spend 2 or 3 days feeling a bit rubbish and usually a little bit worse than you did before. So I think, you know, we'll explore that a bit later. I think that the need to, the sort of requirement for having to want to feel better, because I think sometimes that's what's lacking for people, is that they want to in principle, don't they? They obviously want to feel better. No one particularly is cultivating feeling bad. But I think sometimes that need, that want to feel better, that, okay, I'm willing to do what it takes now. That even if I don't feel like it, even if I wake up and everything just feels rubbish and I'm feeling rubbish and I just want to stay in bed, I'm not going to. Because that's as simple and as straightforward as that advice is, and it would work, it's really hard to do. In that moment, it's really difficult to really drag yourself up and out, you know? And that's why I admire you, because some of the stuff that you tackle around, like recently I've seen a lot more about like porn addiction and alcohol, and these are things that, like, you know what I admire about that is these are areas of life that we know happen with everybody, literally everybody, but nobody talks about it. About it, you know, but it's happening in the background, and that really is shame's power, isn't it? It's like, right, we're not going to talk about it, which means it will always be here.
100% And like, when I was going through the process of, do I start talking about these topics, it's like, effectively, I concluded I've just got to take one for the team, because these need to be talked about. Like, there is a very clear reason as to why a lot of people feel shit in their heads. Things like booze and porn, they are core factors, and they got to be talked about. And it's interesting, the response, like, especially with the porn one, like, I don't want to be a guy that's talking on the internet about porn, but I know it needs to be talked about.
Yeah.
And just the quantity of men DMing saying, like, as a result of that video, I just didn't watch porn for, like, I always say in the video, like, see if you cannot watch it for a week. And they'll message me being like, I'm so much more motivated and driven. I had no idea that porn was having any impact on me at all. It was just like a fun thing I do at night. And yeah, these factors are significant. So when I see that, I think that's kind of reinforcement to just keep making it, because if it's helping people.
And that is why I admire and respect you, because you're right. You did take one for the team. I'm sure, you know, I don't know, but it's possible you got some probably less nice messages.
Some people don't want to see this.
No, and that's difficult because you are taking a risk, you know. But one of the things I found interesting about that was that how porn, which obviously essentially you're watching sex, can actually affect your libido. And I was like, wow, like in a negative way. I was just like, that sure. kind of in a weird way doesn't make sense, but actually when you think about it, it does, you know. So
well, I think people really mistake what would be the right wording, like sex drive for just like feeling horny. And it's like people, you might think, oh, I've got really high sex drive because I love watching porn every day and I get really stimulated when I watch porn. But then sex drive is more how much actual sex are you having with people. And there's a lot of guys that are like one person, not necessarily people, but there's a lot of guys that will think, I've got really high sex drive because I watch porn every day. But then it's like, how well are you performing in the actual real act in your life? And I think a lot of guys will message me saying, like, for example, they'll be on a night out and they'll think, yeah, I should probably pursue like chatting to girls in bars and all that sort of stuff. And then they get in their head that maybe I could just go home and watch some porn later and not bother with the pursuit of a woman. And then that can become a very repetitive loop. And I'm someone that believes humans need to definitely be keeping that act as a big part of our society. It's like the core of what makes us humans. So porn taking over that isn't great.
And I think humans as well, we will always gravitate towards what's easy. And I suppose there's a lot of anxiety that comes with talking to the opposite sex and fear of rejection and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, one of the two words that sprung to mind there that are really obvious is that porn can't provide intimacy and connection. It just can't. And if we learned anything from, you know, the pandemic, is that we need that, you know, when we weren't able to see our friends, and it's a bit of a leap, obviously, but when we weren't able to see our friends and family, like that intimacy and connection was gone, you know, and I think that we all realized that was important. And there was a lot of mental health challenges and emotional health challenges that surrounded that. So I just wanted to say that to you, really, that I admire it. Cause you sort of jokingly say you took well for the team, but you did in a way.
You don't want to be the guy, like I also don't want to be the guy that girls think, fucking hell, that guy's watching a lot of porn. That's just not the vibe I'm
there's
seeking.
There's a lot of undertones there that could be like misunderstood. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's got to be done.
well done, mate. Well done. You know, what you did was you took one for the team, and I'm almost positive you helped a lot of people with that. So, you know, and the knock-on effect will be that, you know, those relationships will improve as well. So it's got a big, big sort of net cast there, I think.
More videos will continue coming out of the topic. I can guarantee that.
I'm sure you're getting plenty of questions to answer. But I mean... Let's go back to basics, really. So for those that aren't quite sure, what is neuroscience?
Neuroscience is basically the study of our brain. So everything that's going on in our brain, but then also the study of our nervous system. So we have this whole parasympathetic nervous system, sympathetic nervous system, the thing that's governing effectively how stressed and calm your body is. So it's effectively study of brain and body together.
So when you say like parasympathetic nervous system and the other one, I forget.
Sympathetic nervous system. Sympathetic,
that's it, yeah. What are they?
They're these systems that like really control the level of arousal in our body. So we have one that creates a lot of energy and fires us up. If you went to like a really simple hunter-gatherer scenario, one is going to lead to us suddenly being able to run or fight or whatever it may be. That's the sympathetic nervous system. And then we have this other one, parasympathetic, that can really calm us back down. And we effectively need two systems, one that gives us a load of energy and one that can settle our system. And that kind of intersection between how our brain works and how our body works, that's like the neuroscience topic.
So you can see how chaos can ensue if those two get confused.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, you can see how chaos could, you know, and you know, I often try to highlight the importance of understanding what we're thinking and feeling. And how sometimes they can be different and how sometimes one can impact the other and vice versa. You know, and it's important. Well, it's how you feel affects what you, you know, how you think, and how you think affects how you feel. And they're both different scenarios. And I think sometimes they can be easily confused, you know.
I think they can. And I actually think about this a lot because I think people underestimate how much the state of our body and how our body is feeling impacts how our thoughts operate. Like for something so simple, a lack of sleep really, really leads to a lack of that serotonin chemical, which is this mood chemical. And literally a lack of serotonin will make our mind much more irritable and like annoyed at life. And people might be sitting there really thinking like, I'm really pissed off about this situation with my girlfriend or work or whatever it may be, and not realize that it's largely just because the body is out of balance. Those thoughts aren't actually that truthful. And I have to constantly guide myself with this. Like if I have a weekend, for example, where I party harder, like have some late nights and I drink a bit more alcohol than I usually would, I know that's going to mean the dopamine as well is really low. When our dopamine is low, we feel like a laziness and a lack of excitement for our life. Mm. And when I'm having these thoughts, I have to check in with myself. Even still now to this day, I go, yeah, but remember the dopamine is low. So these thoughts aren't probably that real and truthful. And I think having that awareness makes such a difference to how you feel in your head.
That is so important, because sometimes you can go off down a well and it starts. I say it all the time to people about how a thought can just create this wall. Like I call it a worry wall. So you have a single thought, which is just a thought at that point, and then you apply a little bit of meaning to it, which applies a little bit of meaning to a bigger picture and a little bit of meaning to a bigger picture. And before you know it, you've built this, if each of those thoughts or meanings create a brick, you've built this huge wall, which makes you unable to go forward. And you just feel not doing anything. You're just like, I'm not going to do anything now. I call it a worry wall. And it's so true that you don't have to latch onto that thought. You don't have to apply meaning. Sometimes the thought you can have is, nearly. And again, some people are going, oh, so stupid. I always do that. No, wait a second. No, you're not stupid. You just nearly got caught out by that little trick again, you know? And it's a bit it's a bit more playful, isn't it? A little bit less unkind to yourself, you know? Yeah, because that's the other part of it, isn't it? And I think what you pointed out there is so true. It's been able to create an awareness and go, wait a minute, I know what's going on here. Because let's face it, like most people, it's a basic need that's causing so much stress, like going to the toilet. Just go. The amount of women especially that hold it in, and I'm like, why? Because <You know? laughs> I'm 42 and I don't have that option anymore. If I need to go for a wee, it's now, right now. And if you're tired, get more sleep, which I recognize sometimes is difficult if you've got things going on. Being hungry, that's where the word hangry comes from, isn't it? You know,
And hangry is low serotonin as well. It's why we get so irritable, because literally when we're hungry, our body is craving that serotonin molecule. Food is what like builds it. So hangry is a classic thing.
Yeah.
The human needs idea you said there is so true, because I hold the perspective that like this mental health like epidemic we've got now is a bit more formulaic and easier to understand than society is recognizing. And I think there are a lot of really core human needs that humans require for our survival. And I think we're losing a lot of them over time in our techie world. And I think the brain and body is just screaming at us and saying, I will make you feel shit until you get these core things back, whether it's food or sleep or movement or relationship. Or sunlight, these like really core natural needs that humans have. And whenever people go through like the training and stuff we do, if you add core things back into your life, it's ridiculous how much just like little behavioral changes impact all these thoughts that are happening.
Have you ever seen the film? I think it's called Idiocracy.
I don't think I have.
But it's about a society X amount of years into the future that brands have become so powerful that they have dominance over people, the way people think. And one of the brands is Gatorade. So they've told everybody that the only thing you can drink is Gatorade. The problem was, though, you skip forward a few decades and they're putting Gatorade on their crops, because they no longer focus on what water is, because they just use Gatorade for everything. And the crops start to die. And no one understands why, because you've got generations of people that have grown up like thinking Gatorade is the only thing you can use. And this guy transports from the past into the future, and he's like, guys, why don't you just use water? And they're like, what are you talking about? And they don't understand. Wow. And the whole idea is that that society slowly, the boundaries get pushed. So we get so far away from what the basics, the core of understanding, that we no longer just don't have that knowledge anymore. And it takes someone who comes along and says something as simple to us. It's like, why don't you just put water on it? And they're like, water? What are you talking about?
Wow, that's wild. Society is almost doing that. We are losing some of our like really core intuitive insights to how a human operates, for sure.
Yeah, and I think as humans, like we have this thing that I suppose in some ways is helpful and in some ways is unhelpful, is that we naturally gravitate away from what causes us pain and towards what causes us comfort. But sometimes that that understanding of what comfort is in the short term can sort of cast a big like doubt over what's going to be comfortable in the long term. Like you say, like, you know, that's where I suppose people commit adultery and people get addictions because they keep getting them small hits and not realizing that it's impacting their life on a bigger scale, you know?
Interesting. Can I tell you something wild about that away from pain towards comfort? Because this is quite cool.
Yeah.
There's this book called Dopamine Nation by this lady called Anna Lembeck, and she's one of the biggest kind of dopamine addiction researchers in the world at Stanford Uni. And they've done a big analysis of this concept of pain and pleasure. And dopamine, this chemical, is created in our hypothalamus in our brain, which is effectively like above the roof of your mouth. And dopamine is what can create all of our experience of pleasure and reward and all of that kind of stuff. They basically discovered that pain and pleasure are actually co-located. They're in the same place and they actually work on a seesaw so that if we experience a load of pain, our brain will respond by making us actually feel a lot of pleasure and vice versa. To give you some context of how that would work, back in the days of hunter-gatherers, and it's always important to look at this because 400,000 years of that and then 5 minutes of this effectively. So that's really what our brain was for. If we had to go out in the freezing cold, hunting and finding food and building shelter, that is just so much pain for our brain to take on. But we had to have something in our brain that made us feel good about doing these things, because otherwise we would have just given up and died effectively. Yeah. So when we had a lot of pain, our brain would respond by giving us a load of pleasure for that. On the other side of it, if we just decided, actually, I'm not going to contribute to the tribe and I'm just going to sit around and eat fruit and shag or something like that and only have pleasure, the brain would literally make us not feel good so that we'd be forced to try and contribute again.
Wow.
When you look at our modern lifestyles, how many painful things are we doing? And pain might be exercise or really hard work or things like the cold shower thing is now massive. This is pain stuff. And then we've got so much pleasure stuff, the social media and the porn and the junk food and booze and all these different things. And basically, if we have loads and loads of pleasure, our brain has no choice but to make us feel like crap. And if in an attempt to try and get this seesaw to tip back, which is just like, it's crazy. It's such a clear explanation as to why a lot of us feel pretty shit.
Wow, that's just blowing my mind. That's amazing. No, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. Because you could sit, you could, a thousand scenarios played out in my head at once there. Just so many examples of what you just said. That's so true. Wow.
And hard things make us feel good. Like if you, for example, went out on a hike with your friends on like a Saturday afternoon and it was really cold and windy and wet and you're like, oh, this is tough out here. You can absolutely guarantee when you get home and you sit down and have a shower, you're going to think, wow, I feel so good now. And that is just how our brain responds to difficulty. Yeah. So we're designed to experience difficulty. And nowadays we just live such comfy lifestyles. Like people can't even bother to get like a train to the office anymore because that is too much effort. That is literally too much effort.
I laugh, but it's true.
It's true. People use like food shopping delivery apps like to deliver things that are like 5 minute walk away. And it's like humans are designed to put in effort. So we need these things.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, it's interesting you say that about hiking, because I've got a friend called Sober Dave. I don't know if you've heard of Sober Dave. Mm-hmm. And
I have actually. Yeah, I remember connecting with him.
Yeah, he's a great guy, such a great guy. But he's doing a trip to Morocco to climb the Atlas Mountains. And he said, it sounds like it's going to be terrifying. So who would I like with me when I do that? I was thinking of you, Johnny. And I was just like, my immediate reaction was, nah, that sounds really hard and really scary. But that's when I thought, that's exactly why I'm going to do it. Because it does, it scares me a little bit, you know, because it's really, there's so many unknowns there. I'm not going to go into it, it'd be boring, but there's so many unknowns there, even from the people I'll be with to the environment I'll be in and all of the challenges. But that's exactly why I want to do it, because that to me is living. It's having those challenges and just thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get through this, but I know I will, you know.
100%. That's a good like human thing to do. That is just like the kind of adventure that a human is like optimally designed for, and one that basically no one does anymore. Like people don't really do these sort of things. So applaud you for going for it.
Don't applaud me yet. Let me see. If I come back and we speak. Yeah, I was reading up on altitude. I was reading up on altitude sickness last night, and I was like, oh, I've got to stop reading about this.
Yeah, just don't give yourself too many things to worry about. See how you survive in the situation.
I think you're probably right, yeah. So one of the questions I had was, how does the nervous system and the brain impact our mental health and emotional health? I'm not sure you might have really answered that already, really.
The nervous system, again, it's just like a system that can either make us like stressed, very energetic, or calm and slowed down. Mm. And it impacts mental health massively, because if we're too overly relaxed, we'll end up just not doing anything at all. So we need some things to stimulate us and give us some drive. But equally, if we're overly stressed, our brain gets like super worried and overwhelmed. And we have a lot of things in our modern world that are activating the stress system, the energy system. The news is like a massive, massive thing on this. Like, we have these alerts all the time that the world's in chaos. That would be something that's not great for the nervous system. And equally, a lot of the things on the other side, the calming system, which is largely rest, is good. Like actually sitting on the sofa and just watching some telly and like not having a phone in your hand, frantically watching it on your phone, or getting out into natural environments, sunlight, calm breathing. If you look at how a human lives, although we're not necessarily putting in that much hard work, we actually don't have that much like real proper chill time. Like the absolute optimal would be you with three friends sitting on the grass in a park in the sunshine. Like that would be optimal nervous system experience. And if you think about that, imagine you with your best friends in the sun on the grass. That does sound pretty desirable.
Yeah, straight away.
That's largely what we did for 400,000 years. Again, something we're doing less of now. And we need more of those sort of activities that really just chill us out, and a bit less of like the franticness of the modern world.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned phones, because it's the sort of purpose of a phone is to connect us. But actually, I think in some ways it's disconnected us so much.
You know? 100%. Like, I definitely believe the phone is the core of the mental health challenge in the modern world. I think it's like the number one core of the problem. And it's also enabling mass progress. My whole entire life and career is built off the fact the phone exists. Definitely not that I think it should just disappear, but like I spend a lot of time working in the younger people space, training schools and teenagers and stuff like that, and the shift in mental health over the last decade is so unbelievable from when I was at school to what's happening in schools now. And really the only difference is the phone. So it's a big thing, this, and learning to manage it is huge.
Well, just then, like you said, you know, watching TV without being on your phone, meeting up with your friends instead of speaking to them on the phone. And, you know, like I remember not so long ago, well, like the lads group chat, you know, we're all in there, all chatting, we're laughing, sending each other memes and having fun in there, but we're not really together. We're doing it for a phone, but it gives us enough for us to not ever really sort of go, oh, should we get together Saturday or anything like that, you know?
I know. So, and if the option was sit at home every day, talk to no one, or go to the park and see my friends, you'd always be going to the park to see your friends. But now, because the opportunity to connect is there, we are doing all these things so much less. And these are coming back to that human needs things. Having fun and balance with your mates is just like at the core of what we need.
Yeah, it is. And you wonder, you always ask yourself, why don't you do it more and all those things? And I mean, what's funny to me is that, you know, when we came out of the pandemic and we were able to see people, and I'd start going to events and doing, you know, speaking at events, and I'd see people that I felt really close to, but I realizing in that moment, I've never actually met you. You know, I've had some great conversations with you. I've told you things that I don't tell many people, but yet I've never met you. Like that's crazy. I don't understand how that's happened.
It's wild.
It is. Okay, so that's the nervous system and the brain. I mean, you know, you mentioned DOS. Is that how you say it? DOS?
Yeah.
Dose. Sorry. Obviously, dose. Dose. Actually, it makes sense. I'm going to shut up and move on from that massive blunder.
That's a good one.
And you mentioned like dopamine and oxytocin and serotonin and endorphins. I mean, all of that they're the sort of mental health brain chemicals that we need.
Yeah.
Where do we get them from? What are they? I mean, how do you want to go through it? Do you want to go through it separately or all together?
I'll give you a little version on each one. I think if we go through from dopamine and give you a bit of an insight into each one and like the core things that impact it, basically.
Okay.
As I say, these are very much the mental health brain chemicals. They impact a number of core things. The dopamine largely is creating all of our drive. All of our desire to do anything in our life is created by the dopamine. And if you took it to the hunter-gatherer scenario, for them to want to put into the effort to go hunting and build shelter, find new places to live, all these things, dopamine basically comes into the brain and gives you desire. And then as you're pursuing the goal, it makes you feel good about pursuing the goal. And if you think in your life, when you're really chasing down a goal, it does feel quite good when you're making progress on a goal. And then you successfully achieve the goal and you're like, wow, that feels really good. I'm so happy I put in all that effort. And then the dopamine resets and it basically keeps you on this constant pursuit. Anything in our life that is effort that makes us feel good. If you give something super simple that I talk about on Instagram sometimes, something like cleaning our home is something that is effort, something we procrastinate and put off a lot. And then when we do it, we think, oh, that's actually pretty good. This feels quite good that I'm doing this. Then afterwards, you get this satisfaction and accomplishment. So dopamine is largely, if you put in effort, and then it makes you feel good after, these things build dopamine. The challenge we have with dopamine these days is we've created a lot of ways to experience the pleasure, the end result, without any of the prior effort. And anything, this kind of works on like a graph that if you imagine like a graph going up slowly, like you gradually put in effort and then you feel good and then it calms back down, like a slow curve and then a slow curve back down, that would be fine. The dopamine is going to stay quite consistent. If we take something like alcohol, the dopamine surges up really quickly. And that's why when we drink the pint of beer, we're like, oh, I feel so good right now. And it surges up really quickly, but because it surges up quickly, it has to drop down quickly as well, because everything works like that. And all these things that create big surges, they create big drops. And for a lot of people, the dopamine, rather than just like slowly up and down, it's like going up, down, up, down, up, down. And when it's down, when it's low, we really feel very low in motivation. We procrastinate, our brain gets a bit anxious and stuff like that.
Do you think that lowness and that the feeling of that lowness is in direct comparison to how high the high was?
That is such a good question. Yeah, I think they perfectly correlate almost. Yeah. Because if you take something like the difference between a hangover or like taking cocaine, like a powerful drug, the low is going to be even lower on the cocaine because it took you higher with the dopamine effectively. And finding that like dopamine balance is something that's very hard to fine tune in our modern world, because we want to scroll the social media and we want to like drink with our friends and stuff. And I don't guide anyone to try and live like some perfect healthy lifestyle. I think it's just unrealistic in our modern world, but it's basically learning to slightly reduce the like dosage of the crappy behaviors and then increase all the things you're doing in your life that are effort. So whether you can like play sport or really chase down your career or whatever it may be, anything that's effort for you is going to effectively counteract these high pleasure behaviors. But a lot of people are living in a life of largely just high pleasure behaviors. So the dopamine, super low, makes you feel like shit.
I think also it's worth acknowledging sort of what you say to sort of nurture an awareness that marketing companies know this now. So they're using this tactic to make you want to stay high, you know, by maybe offering you something that makes you get a big dopamine hit, but then telling you, oh, you shouldn't feel like this when you get the drop. Oh, you shouldn't feel like this. You need to do it again. You need to do it again. You need to do it again.
You need to do it again, for sure.
Yeah. It's annoying, but you know.
They're very aware of how these things work. Like TikTok's like the optimal dopamine platform. They've really just mastered the dopamine to the brain. You just know that if you open that app, you're feeling pleasure immediately.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just the faster, like even when you go between Instagram and TikTok, you know you're going to get pleasure faster from TikTok than Instagram now. Like they have achieved that as a goal. And that's you are really now watching every platform copy. Reels has completely copied it. YouTube Shorts, even Reddit basically has TikTok in there. Even Netflix, if you're not on Netflix on your phone, if you go on the Netflix app on your phone now, has basically TikTok in it, which is just
I didn't
crazy.
Know that. No, that's that's crazy. No,
more
that's
addictive stuff to get. Recommend you guys.
Whoa.
Do any of these things. But it is tricky, and when we're the challenge is if you start doing more of these behaviors, the dopamine starts fluctuating more, and then the more you feel like shit, the more you constantly seek for the quick rewards to help yourself climb back out. But the only if you are in that space, which I have no judgment if you are, I've been in that space many times, the only way out is effort, basically, is to get the dopamine climbing back. So that could be so small. That could be like, okay, today I'm going to go to the shop, buy some good food, and I'm going to cook a healthy meal. Like that's in this effort, dopamine start coming back. Cleaning your home would be good. A little bit of exercise would be good. But finding your little area of how can I get more effort into your life is the only way. It's the only way to recover the dopamine.
That is, that's a brilliant message. I love that. Like, how can you put the effort back into your life? That's perfect. I really like that. And I think also there's something to be said from sort of like normalizing the low instead of demonizing it and saying you shouldn't feel this way, is to say, no, this makes sense because I had such a great night last night. I'm probably going to pay for it a little bit. Like everything has consequences, doesn't it?
It does. You know? It does. And the awareness is key because, like, for example, one of the videos that whenever I talk about it, it really trends on my page is talking about the impact of alcohol on your thoughts on Monday and Tuesdays because. Everyone, like, say you get drunk on Friday, you have the really big hangover on Saturday and you feel like headachy and just like that crappy feeling. But people really think of a hangover as a very physical experience, and not as much within their thoughts. And alcohol will take about 72 hours to leave the system. And when it leaves, say on the Monday and Tuesday, the dopamine will really drop because literally the alcohol is no longer in there anymore. It's no longer in your body. So the alcohol really drops, the dopamine really drops down. And then our thoughts change. Our thoughts are like more irritable and annoyed and low. If in that moment you can tell yourself, this isn't my current situation that's creating these thoughts. It's just the alcohol leaving. Just that awareness makes it not as bad. But if you don't have the awareness and you think, oh, I hate my job and I hate my girlfriend, all this sort of stuff.
Start making big life decisions.
Basically, Mondays and Tuesdays, make no life decisions.
None.
No life decisions happen on Mondays. Thursday is always the day in the week where everyone feels pretty good. That's all. Everyone's like, Thursdays, yeah, I feel pretty good. Fridays, I feel really good. And it's really just because the dopamine's recovered from the weekend. That's the only thing that's happened. So life decisions on Thursday afternoon, probably the best time.
Yeah, don't start talking to your partner about whether this is working out or not on Monday.
So, no, save it for later in the week once you're back in the balance.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't drink anymore. I've been sober for a couple of years, but I remember... it's just a decision that had to happen, really. It was one of those. I was kicking the can down the road and then one day it just became very apparent
that I needed to make that. I think it's a wise idea.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard in the short term. There was a difficult year, the first year, but now I'm at a point where I genuinely and honestly don't think about it anymore.
That's cool.
You know, I really don't, you know, but like I say, it was a hard road to get there, but here it is. So the next one was oxytocin.
Yes. So this is the human bonding hormone and basically creates all the desire for us to connect with each other. When we are born, when our mum gives birth to us, the mum and the baby get this giant surge of oxytocin, which creates this connection. And it creates this massive desire for the mum to like care and love this baby. And then for the baby, it creates this initial desire to be like, okay, all these big older people, I need to just like make sure I'm always around them so that I can survive. So it's just like this human connector. And anytime in our life that we receive love, or very importantly, we give love and we contribute to others, this oxytocin chemical goes up and makes us feel connected to people. It massively calms us when we feel connected to people. You can imagine from an evolutionary point of view, if you ever were suddenly excluded from the tribe, you are completely effed effectively. Like you're not surviving in a jungle on your own. Mm. So we have this real need to be connected into groups effectively. And if you look at your life, whenever you've had a moment of feeling excluded, even from like a dinner or like a birthday or something, it like really makes us quite anxious and nervous. Yeah. And that's because of that hunter-gatherer drive to always make sure we're connected into a group. So big thing with oxytocin, making sure we're in environments where we receive love from people, and then massively, massively important, making sure we're contributing to the people in our life. We're showing them kindness, giving them love, complimenting them, just like being a support system. Leads to this one going up.
I wonder if like shame is like oxytocin's weapon to bring us back in again, you know, because sometimes if you think about it, like in a hunter-gatherer state, you know, if we start to get a bit uppity and think, oh, I'm better than the tribe, I'm going to leave the tribe, and it's like, who do you think you are to go off and leave the tribe? You think you're good on your own, do you? That's like shame, isn't it? It's like flicking shame at somebody.
very true. Yeah. And these mechanisms, 100%, like there will be subtle ways in which all of these different behaviors are impacting these things. Like these chemicals are just like a core communication system to help us survive as a human, effectively. And all of these little things, it's interesting working in this space because some of it you're making like slight assumptive ideas, and a lot of it is just like very researched hard data. But these chemicals are new for our society to really understand. That's why they're trending so much, because it's like a new thing to learn and read about. So shame, 100%, is going to be impacting.
Yeah, wow. Serotonin.
Serotonin is the one responsible really for our mood and our emotions. And it really connects to this whole nervous system, this whole system that's calming or stressing out our body. And interesting thing with serotonin is, with the other chemicals, they're all made in your brain in that hypothalamus thing. And 95% of this serotonin is actually made inside our gut, inside our digestive tract. And it largely means that anything that leads to our body functioning really well leads to serotonin being built. And then as a result, the body feeling good, the body tells the brain, I feel good, and our mood gets a lot better. And when you look at the core behaviors that impact serotonin, first one, nutrition is absolutely massive, because if you imagine this stuff's literally made in your stomach, if great food turns up, serotonin builds because it's like a useful resource. If the McDonald's turns up, it's like, well, what the fuck is that? I can't build serotonin out of a McDonald's. So that is why it can't. And that's why like food is so influential on our mood. Like it's, we eat a McDonald's and we think, oh, this is so delicious, oh, this Big Mac. But then we do feel shit afterwards. And that is like our body very quickly telling us, you can't build serotonin.
That was a mistake.
that was a mistake. And as I say, this is a survival machine that we live with. Yeah. And then on the other side, if you chose to like cut up some pineapple, and that's like something, fruit is something I think society should eat way more of in general. But if you did cut up some pineapple and you ate some like really nice fresh pineapple, eating is going to be delicious. And afterwards, you're going to think, wow, I feel quite good after that. And that's because nutritious food leads to the serotonin going up. So food, absolutely massive. And in general with food, I think the more we can connect with like a hunter-gatherer style of eating and go as natural as possible with the food we eat. And if you look at your food and think, could this have come out of the jungle or the ocean? If it could, it's probably pretty good for you. If not, probably kind of shit for you. So the food is big. And then we have nature and natural environments, and sunlight is massive for the serotonin. Again, lack of sunlight, something most humans hardly get any sunlight now. It's huge. This is why, especially as British people, like when it's sunny outside, everyone loves each other, loves the government, loves the world. It's all great. Suddenly it's gray outside and we all feel shit. Serotonin is really the thing causing that. So I think we should have a massive relationship with the sun. And if it's sunny, you should see that situation as the sun is saying, come and say hello. You got to get out there and spend time in it for sure. So you got the natural environments, the food, and then the sleep is really, really big here. So sleep really creates serotonin. Whilst you're sleeping, serotonin builds. A lack of sleep leads to it getting a less.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not all. I think that's one of the questions in a little while, actually. What are endorphins and why are they so important and how can you improve them?
Yeah, so just to run it back, so dopamine or your desire, oxytocin, human connection, serotonin is your mood and your emotions, and then endorphins is actually our capacity to deal with a high level of stress in our mind and physical pain. That's actually why we have this one. And again, back to the hunter-gatherer, if you were suddenly faced with a bear being in front of you, a bear is actually a crap example because you're dead if there's a bear there. If you imagine like some kind of small animal that you might have a chance against, let's go for a tiny bear cub. If you had that situation where you've got to fight this bear, in that situation, if you got really, really stressed in your mind, like, oh my God, I'm going to die. That's not going to be very useful. And similarly, when you start fighting it, if it scratches you and stuff, if you really focus on the pain and you're like, oh my God, this hurts so much. Again, it's not going to be very useful. So we have this endorphin system that releases through our brain and body and takes away the stress in our mind and takes away the pain that we're experiencing in our body. And something like morphine, the drug that we have that you get in hospital, literally eliminates pain. Morphine was built off of our understanding of this. So this is like a natural pain reliever. If we get the endorphins pumping up, our mind is a hell of a lot calmer and less stressed out, effectively. And given the scenario of what its function is like physical encounters, any time that we physically exert our body puts in effort, the endorphins rise. So exercise, running up a hill, for example, anything that's hard exercise, super good. Saunas, really, really good for this. The body like works hard in a sauna. Singing is something that's like massive for endorphins.
Yeah.
And in our training experiences, we have all these different challenges people complete. One of them is people have to sing for 5 minutes every day for 7 days. And just that simple thing makes a massive difference, especially if you really sing. Like if you're driving your car or you're singing in the shower, belt it out. Because the body is literally putting in physical effort, the endorphins release. So you got singing, laughing is big, stretching our body. So anything that gets the body physically going, endorphins go up, the mind gets less stressed effectively.
That explains, like, I used to be a pro wrestler. A very long time ago.
That'd be good for your pain pleasure balance.
Well, yeah, that's it. It's like I used to love it, but then I'd spend like the rest of the time just aching and thinking, well, it must have hurt when it happened. So like, why did I carry on? And like, my son plays rugby, and that's something similar too. So all of these different like chemicals and stuff, how can we improve them in a nutshell? Is it just diet, sunshine, connection? Is it just giving them what they want? In a way.
Yeah, it's basically asking yourself a question with all the behaviors that you're doing. Would this be advantageous to like the survival of a human? That's the simplest way to put this down to a course. So like deciding to sit and really focus on your work. And you know, when you get like really focused and you zone in for a long period of time, you feel like really good after it, you feel really satisfied. And on the other side, if you sit there and do a little bit of work and you scroll some TikTok, a little bit of work, scroll some TikTok, you feel like shit. And something like deep focus, really, really good for dopamine. If you imagine with a human, being a human that's really, really distracted all the time, or being one that can really focus and pursue a goal, in your head, you're thinking, oh yeah, it's really good if I can practice focusing. It's good for human survival effectively. So if you ask yourself the question, that's the best thing you can do. So then you come to all these different behaviors, dopamine, anything, effort, oxytocin, you got to connect with people and massively prioritize in-person connection. Serotonin, getting into the most natural environments with your food, sleep, and nature is huge. And then endorphins, physically pushing yourself. These are the core behaviors that really lead to them all boosting up.
Blimey. That just set your example earlier, like, you know, a picnic in the sunshine with your friends is literally all of it, isn't it?
That's all we need to do.
Just need to be outside eating all the time with our mates.
But like, these things can happen more for sure. We just need these moments. And if you can put yourself in those situations, or for like prolonged periods of time, get away from the phone is massive, because the phone is constantly depleting the dopamine. That's why we love it, because we get these quick hits. And I'm a big believer in like the concept of phone fasting, which is like a window away from our phone.
Love that.
And I think we need at least 60 minutes a day at some point in our day where we don't see a phone. And you could achieve that in the morning. You could achieve that in the evenings. It's really good if you can just like get rid of it. I've had to build in like a big process for me with the phone, because I find the phone super addictive. I love checking my Instagram. I love scrolling TikTok. I love all these things. And I now have this pattern where I'll actually leave the phone at home when I go to the gym in the evening. I play some tennis and I go to the gym, and I'll have this, and I've built up to this, you can find your own balance, but now I have this like 2 to 2.5 hour window off a phone each evening, and it's ridiculous how good it is for my brain, because these chemicals restore, you disconnect from all the stress of the world, you disconnect from your email and your work and all these different things. So for the dopamine, a big thing is like getting away from the phone. However you're going to do it, you have to find a way to get away from it.
I love that, phone fasting. That's a really, really interesting concept. I love that. So I know we're sort of running out of time, so I'm gonna have to be selective with these questions, I think. But I think a big one that a lot of people want to understand is, how can people improve their quality of sleep?
Yeah, that's a good question. Improving the sleep is massive. It impacts so many things about how we feel in our heads. And there's kind of some core steps throughout your day that really impact it. The first thing is, when we wake up, we really need to have sunlight going into our eyes, because we have this circadian rhythm, like our sleep-wake system. And effectively, if a load of sunshine comes into our eyes first thing, the system really wakes up, that you wake up fast. And if something goes up fast, as we talked about earlier, it goes down fast. So the more sunlight in your eyes in the morning, the better your system will turn off effectively at nighttime. And most people spend their mornings indoors. So in the mornings, in that morning routine process, you've got to have at least 5 or 10 minutes where you walk around outside. That's like a non-negotiable if you really want to sleep well.
Right.
The next thing is our body really has to exercise in some way. And this exercise topic, everyone knows they need to do some exercise, but a lot of people lie in bed really struggling with like thinking and not being able to sleep. And a huge part of the reason we sleep is to restore our body. Because you can imagine back in the day, we were doing like 8 hours of walking and hunting and all this stuff. Mm. At sleep time, all the muscles would regenerate. And when we can't sleep, a big part of that is the fact that our body just isn't tired. It's not physically needing the sleep. So it's like, yeah, I don't need to sleep. So I'll just stay awake. Our brain is fucking exhausted and our body is like not tired at all. So the sunlight, first thing, the body has to move. If you're under move, it won't sleep. And then some really cool factors are late night sugar, really, really bad. If we take on like a lot of chocolate or something just before we go to sleep, that's not going to be ideal. So trying to finish up your eating like by 8 p.m. would be really, really useful. And then with the social media, and 100% this is the biggest factor, is loads of us love to get in bed and scroll to TikTok as the last activity we do. And the challenge is that dopamine is obviously what we're getting from the TikTok feed or the Instagram reels or whatever it may be. Dopamine's cousin or like brother in our system is adrenaline. And as I said before, dopamine was all about effort. Adrenaline is this system that gives us tons of energy. So you can imagine it makes sense why they're paired together if it's about effort and energy. And when we surge the dopamine up, we surge the adrenaline as well. And it means that if the last thing we do is scrolling our phone really hard, adrenaline's going up. And then we put the phone down, we lie there and I can't sleep. But you've literally just given your brain tons of adrenaline and energy effectively. So for that last 30 minutes, you really don't want any of these short videos. That's like the big thing. You could check your phone, you could send some WhatsApps. But if you can, for that last period, watch Netflix or read or watch longer YouTube videos. But that last 30 is massive for the quality of sleep.
All right. I love that. That's brilliant. So we've got sunlight first thing in the morning, 10 minutes outside, and then before you go to bed, no phone, or at least reduce the amount of sort of like a short form content that you're watching.
The short form content's the biggest thing. Ideally no phone, like, or there's obviously like an optimal with all of these things. Optimal, yeah, 60 minutes out in the morning and all that stuff. But it's just the short videos late at night and like scrolling the stories and stuff, and maybe refreshing your email, these kind of things. They energize our brain. And these things are all super tempting to do. So
They are. And they're that way on purpose, you know? So it's the difficult one to go up against. And then the last one you said, I think, was no sugar after 8 p.m. So just try to sort of reduce that. And I suppose like any behavioral change, anyone that's struggling with sleep and wants to implement all these things, maybe be realistic, maybe try one at a time and form a habit with that. And then just be kind to yourself. Like, you know, if you're not having phone and you're not having sugar and you used to sit there eating Maltesers while on TikTok, you're gonna find that quite challenging, I think, you know. So, and if you've not got a lot of sleep and you aspire to go outside for 10 minutes first thing in the morning, that might be a bit strange for you too. So be kind to yourself.
For sure. The final thing on the sleep, which is big, is when we lie in bed and we eventually put the phone down, a lot of people struggle with like the fear and worry that happens in their mind. Like we think about our problems and things that aren't going well and analyze ourselves effectively. And that kind of anxious, fearful state is not particularly enjoyable and it really leads to us not being able to sleep. And then we want to pick the phone back up to distract ourselves from the thoughts. The kind of antidote to fear and anxiety is that whole gratitude concept, because fear and anxiety is like this apprehensive state about something in the future or something that's not, you're not happy about in the past. And gratitude is like a state of mind that literally forces our brain to come into the present. And if you lie in bed and you say to yourself, what has gone well for me recently? What am I happy about that's happened recently? And you just really try and think of some things, and you get better and better at this, better and better at this over time. And you think through, oh, did I have a nice conversation with someone today? Or did I eat some good food? Or did something go well with work? Or anything that's made you happy? Maybe you watched a good episode of TV that you really enjoyed. Mm. But if you go towards that gratitude, what you're happy about today, it calms that fearful thinking. So that's final step as you're going to sleep. I'd really, every day, go through that gratitude process. It's insane for the oxytocin. It's insane for our anxiety levels.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, I love that. That's, yeah, gratitude. Yeah, absolutely. Like reminding yourself what to be great and keep it simple as well. Don't go too mad with it. Just like you just said, it could just be a great this conversation. It could be my gratitude for getting to sleep tonight.
And if I think we're disconnected a bit from the word gratitude in our world, if you just say to yourself, what am I happy about? That's all you got to say. What am I happy about? And there will be a lot you're happy about. It's very easy to be focusing on what you're not happy about. I think we have this real orientation towards the negative in our brains. Yeah. And what am I happy about? Just start listing it out because it makes a big difference.
I'm grateful for you, mate. This has been a great conversation. It really has. And I had some questions around neurodiversity, but we'll just have, maybe we'll jump on a live one day and have that conversation.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be really cool. But just to wrap things up, is there anything that you'd like to pass on to people that you feel could help them with their self-development?
What a great question. Sorry. I would like the number one thing in your mind to be, how do I disconnect from my phone more often? I think that's a really good goal in your life. How do I maybe stop waking up and immediately checking the whole thing in a frantic way? Because that really stresses our brain out. So first thing in the morning, last thing at night. And then when you're with your friends and when you're socializing, gotta start getting away from it and like really just being a human that's connecting with people, because this is underestimated, this phone. And if you build a healthy relationship with the phone, I think it leads to a lot of other things transforming in your life as well.
Yeah, love that. Being a human.
Just be a human with the humans, in the grass, in the sunshine, with the pineapple.
that's it, man. It sounds amazing. So just to finish up, what's next for you and where can people find you?
Yeah, so where you can find me is just at TJ Power on all the social medias, TikTok and Instagram and LinkedIn and everything like that. And interestingly, I can now announce this as of Friday, is Neurify has been this company that trains companies and schools across Europe. And we've really built some amazing like training experiences that help you implement all of this stuff into your life in a really realistic way. And we've really wanted to bring this to people to the general public instead of companies and schools having to buy it. And next week we launched something called Neurify Plus, which is a subscription platform. It's £8 a month and you get live training, Q&As, there's a dose video course, a course for your phone. It's a ridiculous amount of value basically, but we're going super accessible because we just want people to experience this stuff. So if you follow on the platforms, Neurify Plus is going to launch and I'm very confident it could be a really cool thing in your life.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well done, mate. That's fantastic news. Congratulations and well done.
Well, thank you, man.
Thank you for this conversation. It's certainly going to be part of my gratitude this evening. And it'd be lovely to catch you on a live and talk about neurodiversity. There's a few questions that people had about that, but we'll get to that another day, I think. But thank you so much for today.
I'm grateful for you, man. Thank you for the great question.
So that's all from me for this episode. Thanks again to my podcast producer, Charlie from Chatter Podcast, and I'll catch you next time for another episode of the Self-Development Podcast.